We're holding on page 68 in Brachos, the middle of Os Nun Aleph, the third line of page 68. We're in the middle of telling the story of Chizkiyahu was sick and Hashem sent Yeshaya to be Mevaka Chola. We said that up until then, Chizkiyahu and Yeshaya had never met face to face because each one felt that the other one, that the other one should show him covered and come to him. So Hashem made Chizkiyahu sick and told Yeshaya to visit him. Yeshaya tells him, "He may sata v'leisichi, you're going to die in this world and in Olam Haba." And Chizkiyahu says, "Why?" And he tells him, "Because you didn't do piri v'ribya." Chizkiyahu says, "Because I knew that I'm going to have children that are no good nicks." And Yeshaya tells him, "Adi kavshi d'rachmana, lamalach, what are you mixing into Hashem's business? You do what you're told, and the Ebishta will do what he decides." So the Gemara continues, the story continues, Amalei, so Chizkiyahu says to Yeshaya, "Hash to have the brata." Okay, so now give me your daughter in marriage. That way maybe my schus will combine together with your schus. And then good children will come out of us. Maybe this that I saw in Ruach HaKodesh, that I'm going to have bad children, would be if I marry some other woman. But if I marry your daughter, then maybe not. Amalei, so Yishai tells him, "The gzerah has already been made on you." Now what gzerah? So Marsha says you could conceivably explain that he means the gzera is that you're going to have bnin zalei mali, and therefore why should I want to give you my daughter? Marsha says that's not what it means. It means that he's saying the gzera has already been made, that you're going to die. So what are you talking about? Hey, the third and fourth line of page 68. So what are you bothering? You want to make a shidduch with my daughter? You're a dead man anyway. Amalei. So Chizkiyahu answers him, "Ben Ometz, Kalei Nebuos Chavatzeh. Finish up your nebuah and get out of here." In other words, I don't accept that what you're saying is correct as a nebuah. Now, why he uses a strong expression, there's a bunch of different explanations. Among them he's saying is, as long as a nevuah is not publicized, then it can be overturned. If you publicize this nevuah of yours, then it's going to have to come true. So I want you to finish it and get out of here, and don't say it anything further to anybody else, and maybe there's a chance it'll be overturned. And there's a number of other different explanations, including a very interesting one, that what he means is actually, he's saying that you cannot really be a true nevuah. In effect, he's telling him, you're a false nub. In fact, Ion Yaakov uses that to explain further on in the story. So what happens? So the Gemara doesn't mention the point over here. You have the Psukim tell how later on, after Chizkiyahu davens, that we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here. Afterwards, Hashem sends Yeshaya back with a message that, in fact, Chizkiyahu is going to be cured and he's going to live another 15 years. Now, when Chizkiyahu hears this, he says, Psukim, it mentions in the Psukim, he asked Yeshaya for a sign that this is going to come true. Ma ois, ki yurpa Hashem li ve'el valisi beis Hashem. Why is he asking for an ois? Yeshaya is already a Navi for 70 years. You don't ask an established Navi for an ois. We know it's a lois and nasu, it's Hashem alakechem. So Ion Yaakov says, when he said, kali nevuas kavatzei, he's saying, in effect, I don't believe you're a true Navi. So now when Yeshaya comes back with a new nevuah, so Chizkiyahu is saying, okay, you're starting all over again. Well then, let's have a sign that you're a true Navi, because that's what we need to ask for a Navi in the first place. Anyway, so he says, so get out of here. Kach mikublani mi beis avi abba. I have the Kabbalah from my ancestor, from David HaMelech. Afilu cherev chadam unachas al tzavari shal adam. That even if a sharp sword is lying on a person's neck, al yimna asmim and anachanim, he should not hold himself back from asking for rachanim from Hashem, because Hashem can save him even at the last moment. Where did David come across that idea? Rashi brings that you had in David's times, you have the story over there where David took a census of the people, and then a magefa broke out, and the psukim describe how he sees a malach b'chabi shvuch b'yadei neturiyal Yerushalayim. You say that half pasuk in the Haggadah, and nevertheless he's still davening to Hashem to be mevatel gzeira. So we see even though there was a cher of chaber over there. That's what we said that yesterday. That's part of what Yeshaya meant by the Hadi Kabshi Rahman Allah. What are you mixing in Hashem's secrets? And you're saying I'm not gonna have children because of that, when you don't know whether they're gonna do tshuva or not. Yeah. So you thought a little bit, yeah. Nibavani Dema Nibra in a certain sense, yeah. Anyway, so that's one explanation. The Vilna Gaon actually gives a different explanation. He says the fact is, in that story with the Malach and the plague, you don't find that the Malach's sword is on David's neck. So what's the Cher of Chadim or Nachas al Tavare? Rather, he says it's actually referring to a story with a later one of the Malchei, with another one of the Malchei Beis David, namely Yehoshaphat. You have the story in Sefer Malachim where Yehoshaphat and Ahav have gone to war against Aram, and the Aramim have instructions to only go and try to kill Melech Yisrael. They're to leave Melech Yehuda alone. All of a sudden, they see Yehoshaphat. They think he's Melech Yisrael. They start attacking him. By Yizak Yehoshaphat, Yehoshaphat screamed out, Hashem Azorei, and Hashem helped him, and he was saved from them. So the Medrash says those swords were actually literally on his neck. And at that moment, he screamed out to Hashem, and Hashem saved him, and they realized it's not Melech Yisrael, and we're not going to go kill him. So literally, the Cher of Chada was actually lying on his neck when he cried out to Hashem. So therefore, so he says that. So the Vilna Gaon says that's what Chizkiyahu now, 200 years later, is saying that's Cher of Chada Munachas al Tzavar Shaladim. Worth mentioning, by the way, in that connection, you have later examples of that also. You have an example of such a story involving the Chacham Tzvi's father. Now, the Chacham Tzvi, the famous Chacham Tzvi, his father was named Rav Yaakov Zak. This Rav Yaakov lived in Vilna, and he was there when he was there during Zedus Tachtat, and a few years later, actually, when Vilna had its own invasion of the Cossacks and the Tartars and whatever. So they were lining up Jews and then lying them down one after the other and killing them. They're chopping their heads off. He was now at the front of the line, and the guy is about to chop off his head also. All of a sudden, the guy has Rachmanis on him. He says, look, you know, you're such a young guy, so pity, you pretend, I'm going to bring down the flat of my sword instead of the blade of it on your neck. You'll pretend like you're dead, roll away as if you're dead, and then you'll be able to hide yourself, and eventually you'll be able to get away. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yaakov's family is with members of his family are watching from a hidden window nearby. They imagine, in their panic, they thought that not only was killed, they actually imagine they saw his head roll away. So Rabbi Yaakov got away. And meanwhile, his wife, meanwhile, had managed to escape the area. She eventually made it to where her grandfather, the famous Rabbi Heschel, lived. And people came to him with aiders that we saw that her husband has been killed by the Tartars over there, and you should be able to be married. She says, absolutely not. Eventually, her husband turns up alive and then told them the whole story. After that, by the way, the upshot is, Rav Heschel said, Rav Heschel was a famous Rav in that time. Among others, he was the Rebbe of the Shach. He says, after that, he says, in a time like this, I'm not sitting on a Beis Din anymore to be Matir Agunas. There's too many possibilities of something going wrong like that, where people in their panic think that they saw something and really they didn't. But there's a real example of Cher of Chadim or Nachas al Tzavar Shaladim where he got away with it. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Itmar Nami, Rav Yechon and Rav Elazar de Ami Tavayu. Both Rav Yechon and Rav Elazar say, Afilu Cher of Chadim or Nachas al Tzavar Shaladim. Again, even if a sharp sword is on a person's neck, Al Yimna Atzmim in a Rachmim, he should not hold himself back from davening for Rachmim. Hashem can still save him in those circumstances. Shenema, you have a pasuk in Eov that expresses that idea. Eov says, Hen Yitaleni Loi Ayachel. Even if he kills me, I will still hope for him. So Eov is saying, even if he's killing me, even if Hashem is sending somebody who's putting a sharp sword on my neck, nevertheless, Loi Ayachel, I will still hope for Hashem that he can save me even at the last moment. So therefore, Chizkiyahu is saying to Yeshaya, if you're telling me that I'm a goner and there's no hope, that can't possibly be a true nevuah, so get out. Well, the upshot was, eventually Yeshaya did make a shidduch, his daughter married Chizkiyahu. Eventually, Chizkiyahu and Yeshaya's daughter had two sons, Menashe and Rav Shekei. Now, there is the Rav Shekei in the Psukim that's mentioned as he was one of the high officials of Sancheiriv. He's the one that Sancheiriv sent to terrorize the Jews of Yerushalayim and threaten them and tell them don't listen to Chizkiyahu who's trying to tell you to trust in Hashem. Hashem is not going to be able to save you, etc. Obviously, that's not the same Rav Shekei over here, because Chizkiyahu's downfall took place 3 days after Chizkiyahu became sick. Or rather 3 days after Chizkiyahu recovered, actually. 3 days later, he recovered right before Pesach, and 3 days afterwards, Sancheiriv's army was destroyed, and that was the end of Rav Shekei and that whole gang. So obviously what the Gemara means over here is that he had a son who maybe not, when the Gemara is calling him Rav Shakeh, it doesn't necessarily mean why would Chizkiyahu give him such a name after such a vile Rasha, but the Pashtus, what it means is that he had the same tendencies as that Rav Shakeh, and therefore it's nicknaming him that. Anyway, continues the Gemara. One day, Chizkiyahu is carrying the two children on his shoulders to bring them to the Beis Medrash. Now, one thing is, a king should not be doing such a thing in public because Melech Shemach al-Kvodeh ain't Kvodeh Machol, and Ben Yehoyada says he must have been doing it in private, where there's not a problem of his covered, but he wanted to show them how important it is to go learn Torah, that even I, the Kvodeh of Asmi, the king, am going to carry you on my shoulders. But then one of them, as he was riding on Chizkiyahu's shoulders, said, Chozi Reishad Abba L'mitzvah Be'gildoni. Tati's head is a good place to roast fish. The Pashas Chizkiyahu was bald. You have to remember, when Chizkiyahu became sick, the Pasuk says he was 39. By the time he married Yeshaya's daughter, by the time he had children with her, and by the time now we're talking children are old enough to be going to cheder, he was in his mid-40s. So apparently he was already going bald, so one of them says his head is a good place to roast fish. V'chad omer, and the other one said, Chozi, they should have a karubi ala korbanam abridis chavim. The other one says it's a good place to bring a korban to a getchka. So now Chizkiyahu realized, you know what? That premonition, that Ruach HaKodesh that I had, that I'm going to have benin delay mali, I see it's coming true that they're talking like that. V'chavtinu ba'ara. So Chizkiyahu threw them onto the ground. Menashe survived that, being falling onto the ground, but Rav Shakeh was killed. One thing is, Ben Yehoyada points out the deeper significance is a fish, you can't eat it raw, but after it's roasted, it's very edible and very delicious. The same way, Menashe had a future going for him. Yes, he started out as a Rasha, and for his first 34 years he was. Then he did Tshuva, as we know the famous story, and the remaining 33 years of his life, he was about Tshuva. Therefore, he's the one, says Ben Yehoyada, who had talked about the fish, symbolizing that eventually he's going to be like a fish, and there's going to be a hope for him. Whereas Rav Shakeh, the other son, put it in terms of bringing Korbanos to Avodah Zarah, and therefore he was a goner. Korya Nafshe, and so Chizkiyahu applied to himself that I see that I produce such bad children. He says on himself, a pasuk from Yeshaya, V'cheirai Kelav Roim. The Kelai, which means in the psukim over there, it means the dishonest person or the mean person, whatever. Kelav Roim, his Kelim are bad. In other words, look at me. I ended up producing bad Kelim in the world like that. So the point the Pasuk is making is that you have a bad person produces evil in the world, so he's saying that on himself. Look at myself, after all, I thought the combined schus will help. No, it comes out that I had Caleb Roy. He's quoting Yeshaya. Well, Yeshaya was his contemporary, yeah. With that said, by the way, he was in Mechotin, yeah. Not as Mechotin, he was a Shrek. He married Yeshaya's daughter. Even if it was a later pasuk, there are places, for example, there's a Tosfos in Gittin that mentions, you have the story of Ashmedai over there, and he quotes a pasuk from a much later part of Tanakh, from Hosea. So Tosfos says over there that they knew the content of psukim even before they were actually said by the Navi and written down. So even if Yeshaya lived after Chizkiyahu, it still wouldn't be. Yeah, Kilai means like a stingy person. Yeah, the Mephoshim on the Pasuk over there say that it means something like that. Stingy person or a dishonest person or whatever, yeah. Yeah, Kilai and Shreya, yeah. In fact, you have a couple of psukim earlier. It says, there will come a time when people don't find the need to hand for the shoyim anymore. Nobody will call the kilai. Nobody will call the stingy person shoya. Nobody will say on him, look how good you are, how generous you are. People will say it as it is. The Gemara continues, in this connection, Amar of Nachman, or of Chanan, Afilu Baal HaLoimus, Omer LaLa'odim, Malacha HuMes, even if the master of dreams, in other words, a person has a dream where someone comes and tells him in his dream that the next day he's going to die, Al Yimna Atzmim, Inner Nachman, he still should not hold himself back from davening for rachmim, shenemar, as the pasuk says, ki beroiv chaloymes v'havolim udvorim harbe, there can be a lot of dreams and nonsense in them, and many things, as later on in the Masechta, we're going to have a long sugya on the topic of dreams and what they mean, and we're going to have the point that all dreams have a little bit of shtus in them. Ki asale kin yirah, rather fear Hashem. So what does it mean? To fear Hashem means to daven. So even a person has chaloymus and he's not sure whether what's in them is havolim or not, ki asale kin yirah, let him daven and not think that the dream shows that something is irrevocable. Marsha explained, because later on in the Masechta, when we talk about dreams, we're going to talk about that sometimes you have malachim that come through a malach, and you have dreams that come through a malach, and those have a true content, and then you have malachim that come through a shed, which are sound nonsense. So like this, a person never knows whether his dream came from a shed or from a malach, but even if he has reason to think it might be from a malach, still asel kin yirah, still let him daven to the So, miyad, so now going back to the story of Chizkiyahu, so now...
Does that mean a good dream could come from a shade and vice versa? A bad dream could come from a malach?
It's possible. I mean, the idea is, in other words, that a dream that comes from a shed is a dream of nonsense. Later on, you have in the Masechta, when we talk about in the ninth parak, we're going to talk about dreams. So it mentions over there that, for example, it says when Rava had a good dream, then he would say, on that, that's the pasuk says, b'chaloy madaber, boy. The pasuk says that Hashem speaks to a Navi through a dream. So in other words, that this hopefully is that kind of dream.
But if
he'd have a bad dream, then he would say, this is chaloy masashov yedaberu. So therefore, yeah. So the story continues. Miyad, so right away, by Yasef Chizkiyahu Ponav al Akir, the pasuk says, Chizkiyahu turned his face to the wall, by Yispalal al Hashem, and he davened to Hashem. Now, there is a halacha in that, namely, we learned earlier in the parak, that when a person is davening, he should be in front of the wall, there shouldn't be anything between him and the wall, except we talked about, for example, if there's a piece of furniture that's fixed in place, or if it's a piece of furniture that he needs to daven, for example, a shtender, then that's different, but other than that, you don't want anything between you and the wall. So we do, there is that point. Nevertheless, the Gemara wants to find another meaning, and it says Marusha, because otherwise, why does it need to stress it over here? If that concept applies any time a person davens, why are we first mentioning it here in connection with Chizkiyahu? So, my kir, so what does that word kir signify? Amar Rav Shimon Lakish mi kirois libay, means he was davening from the walls of his heart, from the depths of his heart. And we find that word kirois used in connection with deep emotions. Shenema, you have the Novi Yumi, he uses the expression when he's backflogging zich about the churban that's going to come. He says, may I echila, my insides, I beg that it shouldn't happen. Kirois libivigoyma, from the walls of my heart, I'm mourning over the churban. So we see that the walls of the heart can be used as an expression when a person is feeling very deep emotion. So that's the kind of thing that Chizkiyahu felt and was davening on that level. Reb Levi Omar al Iske Akir. Reb Levi says that actually, but the word that he turned his face to the Kir means that he was davening in his tefillah. He invoked the concept of Kir, the concept of a wall. Omar Lefanov, he says, Rebbeinu Shlomo, Umashu Namis Shloi Osel Kira Chaskana, Madoch the Isha Shunamis, from after the Parshas Vayera, she made one kir, one wall, as we're going to talk about later in the Gemara, about she and her husband set aside a room for Elisha. So they built one small wall, Hech Yeses Bina, and in the schus of that, he revived her son. Avi Abba Shechipa Sahecho Kula Bekesef, so my ancestor, Shlomo HaMelech, who plated the whole Hecho with silver and gold, all the walls of the Hecho with silver and gold, Allah has come to how much more so that his host should help me out. So that's why he mentions Vayasev Ponev Alakir, meaning that he turned his face towards thinking about the wall that the Isha Shunamis and her husband built, and the walls of the Beis Mikdash, and invoking that host. Hakosev over here brings an interesting point from the Zohar also. We said before that the reason why the Gzeira was on Chizkiyahu is because he hadn't gotten married. So what happens? So now when it says Vayasev, Ponev Alakir, the word Vayasev, in Aramaic, the word for getting married is Nosiv, like Nosiv Ipsa. So therefore, it hints at the idea that now he's agreeing that he's going to get married, which all this time he hadn't done. So, Then he continues in his tefillah. He says, "Zechor no etz asheri salachti lefanecha the emes of Lev Shalom. Remember, please, how I walked before you in truth and wholeheartedly." We know that Chizkiyahu, we're going to discuss soon, the tremendous thing that Chizkiyahu did on behalf of Yiddishkeit in Eretz Yisrael. Keep in mind, his father, Achaz, had been a Rosha and had brought an Avodah Zarah into Eretz Yisrael and even into parts of the Beis Mikdash. And Chizkiyahu, the first thing he did when he became king is clean all that out. And work on strengthening and reestablishing Torah and mitzvahs by the Jewish people. So now he's invoking that source of his own. And he said, "I did what was good in your eyes." So my vatov beinecha asisi. What does he mean by that? What does he mean by that last phrase? It means that, as we learned before, the importance of putting geula next to tefillah. So he was careful to do that in his davening. In fact, Maharsha says, you see, in the Psukim, you have his Geula from Sancheirev, and right after that, you have his Tefillah for his illness. So therefore, we see from the way the Pasuk puts those themes together, that he did the same thing in his death. And Maharsha explains also, just like we had before in the Gemara, there's no big chiddush in doing that on a daily basis. We do that as a matter of course. But the fact that he did it Kvasikin, and it's very hard to time that exactly, was something that he wanted to invoke as a great schus of this. This is Chizkiyahu saying on himself. The Pnei Yeshua has a very interesting vote on it. He says, when we talked about earlier in the Perek about Smichas Geula L'Tfila, so there's an idea, Al Pi Kabbalah, which is brought in a bunch of places in Chassidus, that Geula represents Yesod, and Tfila represents Malchus, and therefore Smichas Geula L'Tfila means that you're putting Yesod together with Malchus by Yigash El of Yehuda, bringing together the levels of Yehuda and Yosef, and that's a tremendous thing. Now, Yesod and Malchus being together is also bringing together Zoh and Malchus, bringing together Zohar and Akeva. So Chizkiyahu is saying, Hashem, you're holding it against me that I didn't get married, that I didn't do period of Rivet. But I did period of Rivet on a Ruchniistic way by being so much Geula L'Tfila. So give me credit for that, please.
This Tfila we're referring to
He's davening for himself to be healed from his illness, right? No, so there was no, his two sons weren't born yet. But this is also, at the same time, you also have this intersected with the whole story of Sancheirev. At that point, Sancheirev is still besieging Yerushalayim and threatening to conquer it. But right at this moment, Chizkiyahu was focused. So there were two problems. There's Chizkiyahu himself is sick, and the whole Yerushalayim and the whole Jewish people, or what's left of it after the Golas Aseres HaShvatim, are in danger. But right now, we're focusing on Chizkiyahu's illness, and when he's davening, V'atoyd Be'necha Asisi, and so forth, he's focusing on that Hashem should heal him. Because that was, we said, that was, we're skipping ahead. What happened, given that he was concerned that his children are going to end up being no good nicks, then Tachta they ended up being. That's what we said. Now, returning to when he was sick, and when he davens, and now we're analyzing his tefillah. So that's one. Shasamach Geula L'Tfilah. Rav Levi Omer should gonaz sefer refuos. Rav Levi says, the other thing he means by V'atoyd Be'necha Asisi, he means that he hid away the sefer refuos. What it sefer refers, so Rashi here, and also in Psachim, we're going to bring now a Braisa, which is also brought in Psachim, that Rashi explains in both places that sefer refers was poshut a book that contained all the known cures in the world for all kinds of illnesses, and Chizkiyahu hid it away so that people shouldn't depend on medicine, so people shouldn't depend on medical science and technology, they should know to dab into the Eved.
I don't know this, one of them had the same thing.
Avraham Avinu had, it says, that he had a precious stone, that anybody who looked at it was cured. Who wrote the Sefer Refuos? I think there were different opinions. Who wrote it exactly? I think there's one opinion that one of the Shvatim wrote it. I don't remember who it says. Maybe Shlomo HaMelech wrote it, whatever the case. Anyway, Rashi holds the point is that Chizkiyahu did it in order that people should dab into the Eved. Now, the Rambam, on the other hand, mentions this point in Pirush HaMishnayos to Psachim. Technically, that thing that we're going to quote now, that the six things that Chizkiyahu did, is not actually a Mishnah. It's actually a Braisa that was in the printed Mishnayos. You'll find it in the printed Mishnayos of Psachim, but the Rambam points out it's not actually a Mishnah. It's actually a Braisa, as the Gemara is going to quote it now, but the Rambam says, I'm going to explain it anyway in Pirush HaMishnayos. So he says, no, this idea that the Sefer Refuos was part of the Book of Medicine and Chizkiyahu hid it away so people should have B'tochen, the Rambam says, nothing doing. And in fact, he uses very harsh language on people who believe that. So what's going on in the Olam Emes when the Rambam and Rashi met and they argue about it? I'm sure they found some way. But anyway, he says absolutely not. How could a person ever think such a thing? By that logic, you can't do anything in the world because you should trust the Neivishter. By that logic, a doctor shouldn't be able to cure it. No, he says the vort is that there's two possibilities. Either the Sefer Refuos included cures that involve different kinds of magic, where you're not allowed to do them, you're not allowed to do kishuf. Now, you're allowed lahovin lahoris, the Gemara tells us. You're allowed to learn how black magic works in order to teach what's allowed and what's not allowed. The Sanhedrin needs to know it in order to judge people who are accused of kishuf or whatever. So that was why the Sefer was originally written for that purpose, that people should be able to learn these things, not to do them in practice. Chizkiyahu saw them in his times. People are starting to use it in practice, therefore he hid it away. Then the Rambam says a second possibility. It could also be, he says, that this Sefer included cures for various kinds of poisons. Now, many times you have the cure for one kind of poison is a small dose of a different kind of poison. There's actually a medical expression. The poison is in the dose, meaning you have a lot of things where tiny amounts of them can be good for you, but too much of them is not. So you had such things. So you had this book would contain, for example, you should know, here's how you prepare such and such a poison, and you can use it as an antidote for such and such a different poison. For example, a snake bite, yeah, they give a little bit of the snake venom, yeah, you have all kinds of examples like that. So now, again, what was happening was people are starting to misuse it. People are starting to use it. You know what? Hey, this gives me a recipe for poison. I'm going to use it in full dosage and use it to off one of my enemies, and therefore Chizkiyahu hid it away so people don't do that. Those are the Rambam's two explanations of Sefer Refuos. Anyway, so Chizkiyahu is saying, according to Rav Levi, the fact that he hid away that Sefer Refuos, he's asking Hashem to give him credit for that and the source of that to heal. So now that brings the Gemara. Turn it up on him. Vav dvarim asa Chizkiyahu HaMelech. There are six unusual things that Chizkiyahu HaMelech did, with things that you can question in halacha whether they're valid or not. Al gimel hoiduloi, al gimel lo hoiduloi. Three of them, the chachamim of his times, agreed that he had done the right thing. The other three, they did not agree that he had done the right thing. They didn't maybe go and protest what he's doing, but they didn't approve of it. Al gimel hoiduloi, the three that they approved of, is gonna Sefer Refuos. Number one, we just said that he hid away the Sefer Refuos. So the Hoduloi and the Chacham agreed that was a good thing, which Marashah says, by the way, that's why he's using the expression, Batoy Be'inecha Asis. He's saying, if you were to ask people, should we hide away the Sefer Refuos, they might say, no, we want to be able to continue using these cures. But Chizkiyahu is saying, you, Hashem, realize that there's good reason to hide it away, whether because of Rashi's reason or whether because of the Rambam's reason, it's Batoy Be'inecha, and therefore I'm asking you to credit me for it. So that's number one. He's hid away the Sefer Refuos, and the Chacham of his times agreed that he did the right thing. The second one is Kitas Nechash and Achoshes. He broke up the copper snake. Moshe Rabbeinu and Parshas Chukas made the famous Nechash and Achoshes when the people had complained against the Mon. Hashem set the Choshen Srofim to bite them, and Moshe davened to Hashem, and Hashem tells Maseh Lecho Nachash. So they kept that Nachash, and they kept that Nechash and Achoshes for hundreds of years. In Chizkiyahu's time, there was developing a problem that people are worshipping it as a bizarre. So Chizkiyahu broke it up. And the Chachamim approved of what he did, because yeah, you have to get rid of Avodah Zarah. The Malbim actually has an interesting explanation about it. He says, now the Gemara in Cholin tells us that there were earlier kings of Yehuda who were tzaddikim, who got rid of Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, Asa and Yehoshaphat, for example. Why didn't they get rid of the Nechash and Achoshes? So the Gemara says they left Chizkiyah something to be able to distinguish himself with. The question is, what does that mean? They're leaving over a blatant Avodah Zarah in order that the descendant should be able to get rid of it. What kind of a svara is that? So the Malbim explains, you actually have a machloikas in the Gemara. If Reuven owns something and Shimon goes and worships it as Avodah Zarah, does it become also or not? You have a machloikas in the Gemara, whether it does or not. So now, also, and Yehoshaphat may have taken the view, the Nechash and Achoshes was owned by Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem tells him, Asay l'cha Zarah. In other words, he has to use it, make it out of his own copper, and it belongs to him and his family. Therefore, they figured if other people are worshipping it, big deal. They can't answer it anyway. Whereas Chizkiyahu held like the other shit, that they can answer it, and therefore he cut it out. So that's the Mokum Yichol Iskanderboy, that he came up with a new understanding and halacha that the previous kings hadn't had. Anyway, so the other Chachamim agreed that he had done the right thing. And the third thing is Girir Atzmei Sovev al Mitzvah Shachavolim. He had his father's bones dragged around on a bed of ropes what happened was, we said Ochaz was a terrible Rasha. So now, when Ochaz died, then Chizkiyahu, instead of giving him a nice, honorable state funeral, he had him dragged around Yerushalayim on a bed of ropes. First of all, it would be a kapara for Ochaz, that this way he has this bizoyan, such a bizoyan is done to his body, that would help that he doesn't lose his place in Olam Haba. Second of all, it would also give a message to all the Rishayim, don't think that you can be like Ochaz and get away with it, you won't. And therefore, the Hoidulai and the Chachamim approved of what he did, that it was the right thing. Now, the Avgimolai Hoidulai, then there were three things that Chizkiyahu did that the Chacham did not approve of. One is he closed up the Gichain spring. Now, Rashi explains that we had in last week's parasha, we have the four rivers that come from Gan Eden, one of which is called Gichain. That's not the one we're talking about over here. That Gichain is nowhere near Eretz Yisrael. There's a spring right outside the city of Yerushalayim called the Gichain Spring. So Chizkiyahu closed up the outlet to that. You actually have, it's generally accepted, there's a famous underground tunnel under the old city of Yerushalayim that leads to a spring called the Shavoyach Spring. It's generally accepted that Chizkiyahu was the one who had that tunnel built to divert the water. And the Pasuk mentions the reason, because he says if Sancheirav and his army comes, we don't want them to have a water supply outside of Yerushalayim. So he did that. He closed up the Megichon. The Loi Hodur Loi, the Chacham disagreed with him, first of all, because they said he should have had more Betochen and Hashem. And also, Marashah points out, now then the Pasuk over there mentions that he consulted with Sarav the Giborav, and they closed up the other water springs. Sarav implies the other Chachamim. Doesn't just mean noblemen, it means the Chachamim who he would consult with. So apparently, Marashah says, as far as the other water sources, they had no problem with that. But the Gichon, particularly, they said he shouldn't. There is an idea about that, because the Gichon spring, particularly, is connected with Malchus Beis David. It says the kings of Malchus Beis David would be anointed by a spring, and specifically by the Gichon spring, as a simon that their Malchus should continue to last for a long time, like the way a spring constantly flows. So therefore, for him to tamper with Mei Gichon is something serious, and therefore the Chacham disapproved of that. There's a famous story in that connection involving Reb Chaim Vital, where one time the Arab governor of Yerushalayim, we're talking in the 1600s, found out about this, and he says to Reb Chaim, he wants him to undo that, to unblock the Gichon and let it flow again like it used to. After all, you know, he says, if your rabbis say that Chizkiyahu shouldn't have done it in the first place, then I, as the governor of Yerushalayim, I want to undo that. So Reb Chaim didn't want to get involved with it. He used the Shein Kodesh to transport himself with Kritzis HaDerech to someplace else, to Damascus, I think. And that night, the Arizal comes to him in a dream and tells him that actually you would have had a great, you should have done that. And that would have, with that, you would have brought Mashiach closer. And now you missed the opportunity. Because that's the idea. In other words, the Gichon spring has to do with Malchus Beis David. And for it to be unblocked would mean that now Malchus Beis David could have been brought that much closer. It's right outside Yerushalayim. Right now it's stopped up. They have archaeological digs all over the place over there, but I don't know, Lav Davka, I mean, it has to be an Eis Rotzen, obviously. You can't stand have anybody who's in, you know. I don't know. Anyway, so the Chacham disapproved of that. So you have the old city of Yerushalayim. South of the Har HaBayis, it's mostly outside the walls of Yerushalayim, you have the area where they have archaeological digs called Ir David. They found there lots and lots of ruins from the times of the first Beis Mikdash. So right next to there there's a spring with some kind of building constructed over it. Which is apparently the original Gichon spring. And then, like I said, there's also a tunnel over there. You can actually walk through that tunnel where that leads all the way under it. It goes in a circuitous route under Ir David, and it winds up by the Shaloyach spring at the foot of the hill. Yeah.
Yeah. Water in the tunnel?
There's water in the tunnel, yeah. When you walk in there, you're up to... I did it a few years back, yeah. You're walking up to your ankles in water, and I think in some places even up to your knees, yeah. Anyway, that was one thing that Chizkiyahu did that the Chacham disapproved of. Another one is Kitzit Dalsis Heichel B'Shigram L'Melech Asher. he cut off the gold doors of the Heichal and sent them as tribute to the king of Ashur, because the Psukim described over there, like this Chizkiyahu was officially a vassal of Sanhedrin, meaning that he has to pay him tribute. He has to pay him a certain amount of tax or tribute or whatever every year. So one time, Sanhedrin threatens, if you don't pay me, then I'm going to come invade Eretz Yisrael. So Chizkiyahu had to raise a huge amount of money all of a sudden, and the Pasuk mentions that he emptied out the treasuries of the palace and the treasury of the Beis Mikdash. So he figured, look, it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, where otherwise Sanhedrin is going to invade. And the Chachamim disapproved of it, again, because first of all, he should have had more betochen and Hashem, and second of all, because in the end, it didn't help anyway, Sanhedrin invaded it. And the third one was Ibar Nissen v'Nissen. He made an Ibuyor of Nissen in Nissen, which it sounds like it means that after Nissen had begun, he retroactively declared it an Ibuyor. He declared that month. Adoshani, the Loi Hoyd Yoloi, and the Chachamim disapproved of that. And in fact, they have the Psukim in Divrei Hayamim that describe, so this is right when Chizkiyahu first became king. He became king at the very end of Adar. So now what happened was we need to get rid of all the Avodah Zarah that's in the Beis Mikdash. Many people are Tomei and they haven't bothered becoming Tahor all the years. We want to be able to have Pesach is in 2 weeks. We want everybody to be Tahor so we can have a massive celebration of Pesach. And with that, we're going to use this as a chance to reaffirm that we're connected to the Eivishter. So therefore, now there's not going to be enough time in 2 weeks for it to clean out the Beis Mikdash and for everybody to become Tahor. So he figured in that case, we have to make an Ibuyah. We have to add an extra month and that'll give more time for everything to be arranged. So now we're saying, so on the face of it, we're saying that he did that in Nissen, and the Chachamim disapproved of that, because he's supposed to do it in Adar. Well, the question becomes, Umi lesser Chizkiyahu, hachodesh hazeh lachem noish chadoshim, zen Nissen vein achem Nissen? Doesn't he know the fact that when the Pasuk says this month is the head of months, meaning only this one is Nissen, and no other. Once it became Nissen, you can't retroactively declare it other Sheni. Chizkiyah knows that halacha as well. So the other Chachamim are disagreeing. But why is Chizkiyah? What was he thinking? And the answer is Elatah b'dishmur. The answer is Chizkiyah's mistake was he didn't know the din that Shmuel said. Now, of course, Shmuel lived 1,000 years later. What we mean is a din that was known in that time, which later on, Shmuel expressed it, and therefore it's called by his name, but the concept was known long before that. Anyway, Shmuel says, you cannot declare an Ibuyor on the 30th of Adar. Adar is normally 29 days, but suppose for whatever reason it's 30 days, the Adim didn't show up, you still can't declare an Ibuyor on that day, because that day could have been Rosh Chodesh Nissen. After all, the 30th of any previous month could be the first day of the next month, if it's Chodesh Chaser. So the 30th of Adar is already Roy to be Nissen, and therefore Shmuel saying that's already too late to declare an Ibuyor. So Sabar, Hoy over Roy, like a minute, Chizkiyahu figured, we don't care about this Hoy over Roy. The fact is, it is still Adar. We haven't been to Kaddish, the Chodesh of Nissen yet, and therefore he figured he could get away with it, and the Chachamim was saying no. And in fact, there are several psukim in Divrei Hayamim there, when it tells the whole story, that describes him making Pesach b'Chodesh Hashem. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like he means Pesach Sheni. But one explanation of that is, in fact, that the Chachamim, that when Ezra and Nehemiah wrote Sefer Divrei Hayamim, they wrote it in that way to imply that Chizkiyahu was wrong, and the fact what he did is pushed off Pesach a month, which he shouldn't have done. In fact, the Psukim there mentioned that Chizkiyahu himself realized eventually that he had acted wrongly and asked Hashem to forgive him and to accept the korbanos of the Jewish people anyway. There was a whole discussion about him in Sanhedrin as well. The Gemara brings another Manda Omer over there that Chizkiyahu's mistake was not making an Ibuyor too late, but rather that you're not supposed to make an Ibuyor Mipnei HaTumah. This concept of saying, because the Koyanim are Tomei and the people are Tomei, and therefore we want to bring the Pesach for Tara, is not a valid reason to make an Ibuyor, and Chizkiyahu figured that it is. As the case may be, right? Continuing on this topic of Chizkiyahu, Amr of Yechon Meshum Rav Yosi. Let's go back to Chizkiyahu's tefila. Amr of Yechon and Meshum Rav Yosi ben Zimra. What?
Yeah. Rambam says all the time.
So the Rambam mentions this whole point. The Rambam in Hilchos Kiddush HaKodesh mentions this whole point, and he mentions the two mistakes, the two different opinions of what Chizkiyahu's mistake was, whether because it was the 30th of Adar, or because you're not supposed to make an Ibuyor Mipnei HaTumah. And the Pasuk mentions, the Pasuk goes on, we just had it actually, because not in Hilchos Kiddush HaKodesh, it was just in Rambam, Shlosha Perakim, a few days ago. Yeah, that you're not supposed to do it Mipnei HaTumah, because Tumah Tchoyah B'Tzibur. But he did it anyway, and still, the Pasuk mentions that Chizkiyahu davened, and he said Hashem should accept the Korbanos anyway, and sure enough, the Pasuk says, Vayishma Hashem or Chizkiyahu, Vayupar Tsa'am, Hashem listened to Chizkiyahu and healed the people, meaning that the Korbanos were accepted by Hashem, even though he hadn't done quite right. What? Yeah, the Rambam mentions both points. That he was both points. That he was Makadosh and Amlamed, that not Makadosh, it was Ma'aber and Amlamed, as well as that he did it with natural money. So Gemara says, Amar Rav Yechon Meshum Rav Yosef ben Zimra, Kol Atoyla B'schus Atzmai, if a person davening to Hashem tries to make his tefillah dependent on his own schus, he says, Hashem, please help me because I get such and such. Toyla Moi B'schus Achein. When his tefillah is answered, it will be in somebody else's schus rather than his own. As we're going to find with Chizkiyo. V'chol atoyla b'schus achirim, but if he makes it dependent on somebody else's schus, toyla mo b'schus atzmai, then instead Hashem will attribute it to him, and Hashem will help him for his own schus. We, for example, Moshe tola b'schus achirim, when Moshe was davening after the Chet Egel, he made it dependent on someone else's schus. He didn't say Hashem saved the Yidden for my sake, because I did such and such. He said, Shenema z'chola avroham li'yitzok al-Yisrael avadecha. So he invokes the schus of the others. And Tololoi b'schus atzmai, and Hashem attributed the salvation of the Jewish people to Moshe's own schus. Shenema, you have a pasuk in Tehillim, Vayom el Hashmidim, Hashem thought that he would destroy them. Lulei Moshe b'chiroi, Omer b'peretz b'fonim, b'hoshi chamas m'hashkes. Were it not for Moshe's chosen one who stood in the breach in front of Hashem and turned back Hashem's anger that he shouldn't destroy. So we see that the pasuk is attributing the fact that the Jewish people were saved to Moshe's schus rather than to the others. Which Marsha points out, okay, Moshe is the one davening for them, so of course the Pasuk of Tehillim has to mention it, but still could have expressed it something along the idea that if it weren't for Moshe who stood in the breach and invoked the schus of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that cause, the fact that the Pasuk of Tehillim doesn't even mention Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, shows that's mainly attributable to Moshe's own schus. On the other hand, Chizkiyah attributed when he davened, he was davening on his own schus. Recorded the pasuk before that he says, Hashem, remember how I walked before you, the emes of Leiv Shalom, and what I did. So therefore, tololoi b'schus achirim. So when he was saved, when he was cured, then it was and when the city of the Shalayim was saved from the Sancheirim, it was done. Tololoi b'schus achirim. Then that was done in the schus of others. Shenema v'ganosi alir azay sloishia. Hashem says, I'll protect the city and save it. L'manu l'man David avdi, for my sake and for the sake of my servant David. So we see he's not saying for your sake because of the mitzvahs you did, but rather for the sake of David. So that was an example. He was toil of the schus atman. Now, even though we did mention before that according to one man d'omer, we said he invoked the schus of Shloim HaMelech in plating the whole heichal with silver and gold, one explanation is he didn't actually speak that out. He just expressed that mentally by turning towards the wall. But the actual words of his tefillah, Zechor Neis, Asher Es Halachti L'Fanecha, is that he was invoking his own schus. There's another explanation also. Keep in mind, we were saying there were two things going on over there, Sancheirev and his own illness, and when he's davening, especially about his own illness, then he's mentioning only schus atzmai, and therefore he's being told that no, it's going to be b'schus achir. Behindu de Amar Rabbi Shurban Levi. This then fits with what Rabbi Shurban ben Levi says. Yom Rabbi Shurban ben Levi, my dichtiv. What does it mean? So after Chizkiyahu was cured, so in Sefer Yeshaya, it has a song over there, a song of about 10 psukim that Chizkiyahu composed to thank Hashem for his recovery. And he has an expression in there, Kinei l'sholem mar li mar. Behold, when there's peace, that it's bitter for me, bitter. Now, what's the bitterness? He's saying, even when Hashem sent me a message of peace that I'm going to recover and I'm going to live another 15 years, Marhuloi, it was still bitter for me that I was told that it's not in my own schus. So Marsha says, the double expression Mar, first when I was told that there was going to be Shalom, that Sancheirev's army is going to be wiped out, at that point I was sick, so I had one kind of bitterness, and then I'm told that I'm going to recover, but it's not going to be in my own schus, but rather it's going to be because of somebody else's schus, and that's a second level of bitterness. I'm assigning the title.
Salt in the room.
There is an interesting story, by the way, involving the Taz and this pasuk about Laman David Abdi. There's a story where during Xerus Tachpatah, the Taz and a bunch of Jews from his town were hiding out in a fortress in their town. The fortress had old rusty cannons that hadn't worked in many years, and they don't have the Derech HaTeva any way to defend themselves from the Cossacks. That night, the Taz himself, or maybe somebody else, I don't remember, had a dream where they saw this pasuk that Hashem says, I'll protect the city, Laman David Abdi. The Taz's name is Reb David Segal. So they realize that it means the Eibishter is going to protect them in the schus of the Taz, and a nest happened, all of a sudden these old rusty cannons start working, and they're able to shoot cannonballs with them and scare off the enemies. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Chof Tes Tishrei. We know that Amram says that Mashiach is going to be a king from Beis David, Hoygeva Torah, who involves himself deeply with Torah. So that means that Rebbe says that specifically this Yugiyah, this hard effort in Torah, that's going to make it possible for Mashiach to redeem the Jewish people. Now, when you think about it, you would think Mashiach's main role is as a king. He's a melech from Beis David, but no, we're saying that the Horavanya in Torah, that's going to make the difference. Why? Because the Torah is Kodma La'olam, and Torah is higher than the world, meaning that it's higher than all the limitations of Golus. That is why we find that Yaakov Avinu, before they even come to Mitzrayim, Yaakov sends Yehuda ahead, Lahod is the fun of Goshen, to set up a base Talmud that they should be Hoygim Batorah, the same expression, because through delving into and through Horving and Torah, that means that prevents the Golos from having any control over the Jewish people, and therefore we're saying that therefore Mashiach also has to have that in order to undo Golos. Continuing with Halachas of Macholos Asuris, You have to be careful that you don't cook kosher, that you don't cook two pots, one with kosher food and one with tzurefa food, one next to the other, if both of them are uncovered. And the same way, if a yid is not at home and a yid is not yotz benichnas, you also can't be letting the goyish or hired help cook over there either. Another din, if you have somebody he doesn't have a cheskes kashrus, you can't buy from him anything where there might be a chash of iser, for example, wine or other such things. However, as long as you don't actually know that the guy is choshered, then if you're a guest by him, you are allowed to eat by him. So you have, in other words, a yid usually has a cheskes kashrus, but to go so far as to be able to trust him on a say-so to buy something from him, not. That's why we have the concept of ashgachas on stores and restaurants and whatnot. But if you're a guest by him, then fine. Eidach of Nevin B'Surin, he has no, in particular, he has no financial stake in feeding you his surin, and therefore, unless we know that he's kosher, then you don't have a problem. Hananah ben Akasha, Masar Kodesh Baruch Hu Zakas Yisrael, V'chi B'Lam Tam Mitzvah, Shneimah Adrecha B'Tzman Tzidkiyah V'Torah V'Yadim.